All right, so I'm going to start by just making sure I can't see everyone because I've got it on speaker view. Yeah, just want to make sure everyone can hear me okay. I'm outside. I thought given the topic and that we finally have some warm weather out here and I would do it out here. So I will start. Oh, Paulette, you had a question? No? All right. I'll start by saying, my name's Tyler. I'm out on unceded Sauk Nation land, which is on the sort of southwest side of Vancouver Island. And that's where I'll be doing my talk from today. So today, I'm going to try something a little different with my talk. Usually, I'm a little more free-flowing, but in this one, I've written it all in advance, and I'm simply going to read it to you. Well, there's a bumblebee on me. Didn't want to smack it, but didn't want it buzzing me. It just reads you, and there'll likely be lots of time at the end for questions, so I'm not just gonna talk for a full hour. There'll be time for questions and thoughts at the end, in case anyone has any thoughts on whatever the heck it is I'm about to present. So here we go. I believe and have experienced in my own life that there's much to learn in our Zen practice by keeping a garden. This talk is not about keeping a traditional Zen garden with its short-clipped ferns and lotus flowers in small ponds and meditative spaces. And this talk is not going to give you any sort of practical advice on how to grow food. But instead, this talk will attempt to focus on different ways our Buddhist practice can be enacted or understood while working in a garden, in our homes, or perhaps in a food garden. In a monastery. Bob, did I see your hand go up there? Oh, okay. If you've been stuck in a breakout room with me for more than a few times, then it's likely you've heard me talk about this book, How to Cook Your Life from Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment, by Kosho Uchiyomi Roshi. This book is a deep examination of our Zen practice. Based off of Dogen's popular writing, Instructions to the Tenzo, and speaks to how we can put our Zen practice to work in our day-to-day lives. This book was wildly impactful and inspiring to me. Perhaps it was because it was the first in-depth guided sort of study I did with the Sangha and Domio. And perhaps it has something to do with being a Cloud Sangha member, as without having a Zendo, a dirt Zendo to kind of focus my practice on. I immediately was intrigued by this idea of how I practice just in my day-to-day life. So it was here early in my practice that I learned about the term Nyoho. Nyoho has a lot of different definitions, but in general, or the one I like best, is how we Buddhists bring our Zen practice into every aspect of our lives, especially the most mundane. Domio has two podcast episodes on her Zed Studies podcast, number 87 and 88, where she takes on this topic. They're all totally worth a listen. I listen to them pretty regularly, actually. Those two are ones I've read a few, listened to a few times. So this idea of Nyoho that is discussed by Domio and in this book through Dogen's Instructions to the Tenzo have deeply influenced this small talk I'm about to give. So please consider these lines and ideas, knowing that I take no personal ownership over the creation and give all due respect to the inspiration and any potential plagiarism to Dogen, Domio, Uchiyomi Roshi, and many others that I will mention in this talk. When I quote them directly, I'll try my best to be clear. But many of the ideas I present are responses from what I've read in these books and listened in these podcasts. And I just give all credit to those who had them before me. So when beginning in the world of gardening, one of the main challenges may to be simply starting one. Starting a garden can feel like a monumental task. You look out over your new space, this perceived blank canvas, and begin to ask, what season should I begin to prepare? What zone am I in? How early should I sow my seeds? What about the frost and the heavy rains and times of extreme drought? Or perhaps, if you're building a whole new garden where there was not one already, You may start to wonder where the physical garden should go. There is the sun's path to consider, any tall trees, the quality and composition of the soil. These questions are not unimportant, but their answers are simpler than one may have imagined. There is a saying that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. However, as wise as this saying may feel, when we begin our garden, when considering our practice, it is inaccurate at best and harmful at worst. There is really only one perfect time to start your garden in one perfect place. That time is now, and that place is here. Indeed, it is not just the perfect time and the perfect place to start your garden. It is, in fact, the only time and only place. There is no starting your garden yesterday, last week, or last month, and there is no putting off starting your garden till tomorrow. Yesterday's garden is gone. Tomorrow's garden will never exist. Now is the only time. And yes, you may say to me, well, I have started a garden. It's there. Behind me, I can see it. And this may feel true. It may even be true. And yet, it misses the point entirely. We must embrace the idea that each day you come and confront your garden, you're meeting it for the very first time. Your garden of yesterday is gone. You only have your garden of today, your garden of this moment, with these weeds, these aphids, these tomatoes, and these flowers. You have this moment's sun and this moment's wind, this very shade and this rain. This is your garden of now, and this garden of now will never be gone, and yet it will never be the same again. Our garden gives us the opportunity to take the backward step away from the intellectual and focus all our energy on this moment-by-moment practice enlightenment in action. You may look out over your garden, critiquing your space, your amount of direct sunlight, or perhaps regretting the cool temperatures in the evening on your coastal town in the Pacific Northwest. You may wish your garden to be otherwise and fantasize what you could grow if it were just a little bit warmer, or if your neighbor would just cut back that blasted cedar hedge that is blocking your late afternoon sun. These are familiar traps in which much of our time and mental energy can be wasted. We must all work to not waste this moment in these unskillful ways. There is no bad garden. You are just wishing it to be otherwise. You must come to your garden just as it is and work on it just as it is in this moment. And yet, in a practical sense, we must come to terms with the idea that yes, we can only work in our garden here and now. But if you were to truly only think how things are now in this moment, paying no mind of what needs to be done to allow for a future success, a narrow understanding of now will always lead you to struggle with finding success. In this regard, I relate back to an earlier question. When is it time to begin with the work of the garden? There are always things that need to be done earlier in the year, and there will always be things that we need to do now that are, in fact, the work of tomorrow. In the instructions to the Tenzo, Dogen speaks about how the Tenzo must be preparing gruel for tomorrow, today. There are times when we must do tomorrow's work today. Dogen speaks about how in Zen we must continually work to be present in this very moment and in this very place, and yet being present in this very moment must take into consideration the needs of the future. True to Dogen's style, this can feel contradictory and confusing, and yet it is an important thing to consider in our practice that we cannot be so focused on this moment to the detriment of the future, and yet we cannot be so fully focused on the future that we are no longer living in the present moment. Much like the work of the Tenzo, working in a garden gives us an opportunity to practice and experience this challenging aspect of Zen. Dogen speaks of Shinjin Datsusaruku, where the body and mind drop off. We are to realize our body and mind are constantly changing throughout our life. When in your garden, witness the birds and squirrels. You may see primal animals flitting about, moving from one thing to the next. We may be tempted to see them as simply seeking sensual pleasure, and yet, as they seemingly jump from thing to thing, they are fully and completely in that moment. As the moment changes, so do they. Despite this confused and reactive looking existence, when winter comes, nests will have been made, food will have been stored, and the essential work of their life will be complete while simply being in that moment. To begin, it may be helpful to set up your garden in a way that supports your wishes for thoughtful, present, and mindful gardening practices. Consider setting up a small altar. To do so, find a space out of the way, but that is visible from most areas of the garden. As you are working away with your head down, your mind may easily wander from the task at hand in all sorts of unskillful ways. However, as you pop up from your rows and see the altar with the Buddha peacefully watching you over you, you can give a brief bow and refocus into the now of your work. Along these lines, you may wish to start your day at your altar, giving a bow, offering a short prayer. Let us strive to purify our minds. Let us strive to actualize our practice. Let us strive to benefit the earth. Let us strive to liberate all beings. To all Buddhas, past, present, and future, to all beings in the six realms, to all those dedicated to the truth, we offer the merits of our labor. After your bows and your chants, you may also consider lighting incense. This is not only an act of offering, but can be yet another tool to help you stay focused on your practice. It is far too easy to become distracted in your garden and begin rushing around trying to get too many tasks done. But if, as you're working, there is a slow wafting of incense floating over your garden, this may help bring our awareness back to where we are, back to this moment, slowing us down and reminding us to embody our practice in every little thing we do. Well, a garden can be started anytime. We'll begin ours in the spring. The garden in the spring begins by awakening the soil. There are many times when using your tools, such as shovels, rakes, and hard forks, will be the skillful choice. However, in the early season, do not neglect the opportunity to put down your tools, remove your gloves, and get your hands into the soil. This direct physical interaction will allow you to feel your soil, to remove the perceived barriers between the earth and all its life. And ourselves, and to gain an understanding of your soil and how it's doing in this moment. How were we and how are we connected to it? You may notice what it might need and what might be different, what different plants may thrive in different spaces. As Dogen says in his instructions to the Tenzo, rolling up one's sleeves is the mind's way. Get into your garden yourself, roll up your sleeves, and do the work. This work we do with our own hands is the work of the Buddha. This time of digging and turning the earth also allows us the opportunity to understand our role in the suffering of other creatures. When becoming Buddhist, we take precepts. One in particular, the precept of not killing, may challenge us in this time. We may only be growing vegetables and not engaged in the growing and eating of animals, but everything we dig. Every time we dig into our soil with shovels or scrape away debris with our rakes, we are ending the life of small creatures in our garden. There is no way that I know of where you can have a garden and truly keep this precept. I've just finished the book Yasodhara and the Buddha by Vanessa Sohn, which in the first two books, or in her first two books of fiction, which are, sorry, the first two books of fiction about the life of Yasodhara, the wife of Siddhartha, the Buddha, before he became the Buddha. In it, we're told a story of when she and Siddhartha were young. Before his enlightenment, they snuck out of the palace grounds where he was being held so they could explore the forests. As they walked, they came across farmers just finishing plowing their fields. Siddhartha, having never seen such things, was fascinated, but quickly became deeply concerned for the large animals pulling the plows. They were being led by their noses and were clearly suffering from their labors. As the farmers left, he went out to see the plowed fields. and looked down at the soil, and was further struck by the suffering of all the small creatures that inhabit the soil after the plows came through. The soil was filled with dead and injured creatures. Yasodhara, who had lived a large part of her life outside the castle walls, had seen farming practices all her life, was surprised by Siddhartha's reaction to the death of insects. As I mentioned, while I have not discovered a way to farm a garden without causing the death or suffering of other creatures, we must never grow cold or complacent or normalize this death. Even the smallest creatures living in our soil, we must care for as best we can. As we work, we must try to minimize and at the very least acknowledge their suffering so that we may eat. Throughout your time gardening, you may wish to stop your work and take a moment to bow formally and acknowledge the suffering we are causing and the important role these creatures play in our garden. With the soil prepared, we must begin to plant our seeds. Whether we are planting directly into the soil or into pots to later be transplanted, the time of seeding is a true opportunity for practice. Dogen says, "The true bond established between ourselves and the Buddha is born on the smallest offering made with sincerity, rather than some grandiose donation made without it. This is our practice as human beings. Each small seed we place in the soil is an offering to the Buddha and should be done so in such a manner. Do not rush through this task. Move slowly, recognizing the offering you are making. Some seeds you purchase, such as carrots, may come with hundreds and hundreds of little seeds, more than you could ever hope to plant. Despite the seemingly small cost for so many seeds, we still must work slowly and purposefully and not throw them about, considering them disposable. We must not waste any individual seed. When planting, do not plant seeds with your mind wandering, but also do not plant seeds solely focused on the plant this seed will become, how well it will grow, or what will be harvested from it. Focus on just this as this. Focus on just this seed. As Dogen says in the Genjo Koan's Manifesting Suchness, firewood becomes ash. Ash cannot become firewood again. However, we should not view ash as after and firewood as before. We should know that firewood dwells in the Dharma position of firewood and has its own before and after. Although before and after exist, past and future are cut off. Ash stays in the position of ash with its own before and after. When working with seeds, simply treat the seeds as seeds, with their own before and after. Do not work with seeds strictly with the goal of them becoming plants. Seeds hold their own Dharma position, and in many ways can help us embody Dogen's unique understanding of time. For a seed is a Dharma position, it is a time being. Shinsu Roberts, in her book Being Time, writes that in Uji, Dogen is concerned with the non-dual nature of time and being as expressed in the presenting moment. From that view of practice, a linear view of time can impede realization. A Dharma position has a past, present, and future, but it's freed from being defined from past, present, or future. Each Dharma position is particular and independent. From this perspective of non-duality, past, present, and past, future, and present in this moment. What an opportunity this moment of seeding has given us. Within each seed, in the very moment you hold it in your hand, you can experience that seed expressing a past that continues back to the beginning of existence. From seed to flower and back to seed, as far back as its existence goes. And as you hold that seed in your hand, you hold the future of a seed to flower and seed again, as far forward into the future as you can imagine. And as you hold that seed in your hand, you hold this very moment that embraces all that has been in the past and all that could be in the future. And in your hand, you hold a seed and all that it is in this moment. Therefore, As you place each seed into the ground, do so as a small offering to the Buddha with the utmost sincerity, knowing that with this seed, you hold the past, present, and future in your hand at this moment. As the spring season continues, you will walk through your garden and begin to wonder where your potted plants should go. Again, we can find wisdom in Dogen's Tenzo Kyokin, where he states, "After cooking the vegetables for the morning meal and before preparing rice and the soup for the noon meal, bring together the rice pots and other utensils and make sure that everything is well ordered and clean. Put whatever goes in a high place in a high place, and whatever goes in a low place in a low place, so that high and low, everything settles in place in a place appropriate for it. Walk through your garden and place seeds or plants that need sun in sunny places, and shade-loving plants in shady places. Put things where they should go, and do not try to force things into spaces that they will not settle in. It can be easy to fall prey to the desire to grow plants that do not grow in our climate, out of wishes to be a great gardener or desires for exotic fruits. These desires will often lead to suffering. Your garden should be utilized to the best of its ability. Some plants will grow underground, others will need trellises to grow up high, and yet others will go close to the ground. An order should be found that is skillful in its design and best supports the needs of each plant. Some plants are friends and will help each other grow, such as basil under your tomato plants or peas, beans, and corn. Others will inhibit each other's growth and should be given appropriate space. All these considerations can be made in these early days as you take time to walk through your garden. Also consider the needs of the world outside of yourself. Are you planting too many of the same thing so that this things Are you planting too many of the same things that may strip the soil of nutrients other living beings need for survival? Do any of your plants grow flowers to support the pollinators around your community? We must consider more than our own personal consumption when working in our garden, and remember the interconnected reality of our Buddha nature. And when we are done with our work and you're ready to retire from the garden for the day, do not simply leave your shovel stuck in the ground or your pitchfork lying against the fence. Slowly walk through your garden, picking up tools, plants, empty pots, or hoses, and take them back to your shed. Clean and rinse your tools neatly, coil your hose, and place all things back where they belong. Leave your garden a space of calm for anyone who may wish to walk through it, and leave it ready for your next day's work. As summer approaches, you'll begin to see your work coming to life as plants begin to grow. But do not be confused. You are not a farmer that grows anything. Do not think that you are growing these plants. Instead, consider these plants' growth as you consider your Zazen practice. In Zazen, we are not grasping at enlightenment or working to attain anything. Instead, we sit quietly, upright, and create the conditions necessary for enlightenment to come. Similarly, in gardening, we are not growing these plants. We are simply creating the proper conditions needed for the plant to do what it naturally will do. You sit in the proper conditions to be Buddha, you sit in the proper conditions to be Buddha nature, just as a plant sits in the proper conditions to reach its true Buddha nature. In fact, these plants are growing you just as much as you are growing them. The air you breathe out will be absorbed by the plant. The plant will expel oxygen, which you'll breathe in, which will travel through your bloodstream. At some point in time, you may eat this plant, and it will literally become a part of you. You and this plant are the same. You are each Buddha nature. In Dogen's writing, Busho, the Buddha nature, as translated by Nishijima and Cross, they say, "Those called living beings, or sentient beings, or called the sentient, or called all forms of life, or called all creatures, are living beings and are all forms of existence. In short, total existence is the Buddha nature, and the perfect totality of total existence is called living beings. At just this moment, The inside and outside of living beings are the total existence of the Buddha nature. We do not need to remake ourselves to be Buddhas. We need to open up to our inherent Buddha nature, and to do so must open up the inherent Buddha nature of all living things. We totally exist as Buddha nature. Plants also totally exist as Buddha nature. You are not growing this plant any more than you are uncovering its Buddha nature. It is not yours to recognize, well, it's not yours to uncover, yours to create, or yours to grow. Its nature is to grow, and its Buddha nature acts through it, separate from you. However, while you express your Buddha nature separate from the plants, do not be fooled in seeing you and the plants as separate. You release the carbon dioxide, which the plant absorbs. It releases oxygen to the air, which you in turn absorb. Nutrients are absorbed by the plant from other living beings and the sun, and then are passed back and forth through the soil. And if you consume any part of those nutrients, they become you. I do not mean this figuratively, in the sense of some great circle of life, but in a literal sense, that the Buddha nature we attempt to express is not ours to express separate from all living beings, but is entangled with the expression of the Buddha nature of all things. In Domyo's discussion on Busho in podcast 251, she says, "When we totally exist, we recognize there is no boundary between self and all things." As Dogen says, "At just this moment, the inside and outside of living beings are the total existence of Buddha nature. All things are the self, and everything is precious and luminous in its suchness." So we do not view ourselves as separate from the plants. And Dogen spoke of wellness and discrimination. Non-dual wellness can be understood in terms of neither identical nor different. We are obviously not the same as plants, but we are not completely separate. Where the plant begins has a more porous boundary than the one we may immediately assume. When we view ourselves as separate from other things, and in specifically when we view ourselves as superior to other living things, when we work in the garden, we must practice to recognize and know in our core that there is no boundary between us and all the plants, animals, bugs, bees, and any other living beings in our garden. In the story I said earlier about Yasodhara, Siddhartha saw the suffering of those bugs in the soil and realized he was su it was suffering, sorry, it was his suffering too. Things in summer move fast. Impermanence becomes a lesson we must learn again and again. As we step into our garden with tools and gloves in hand, we must embody the question, what is it that thus comes? Each day your garden will be new. Perhaps new seeds will be sprouting, or plants will be fruiting. You may see beans or peas that are ready for harvesting, or perhaps a gang of well-meaning preschoolers will have ripped up 10 of your thriving tomato plants. Maybe slugs have turned your cabbage into Swiss cheese, or a squirrel may have dug up your newly seeded garden bed to hide food for the winter. We must be prepared for all eventualities and remember that just this is it, right here, right now. Why waste our time in anger, frustration, or imagining your garden you left yesterday or your garden you had today? As you walk through your garden of today, you will see plants you expect to see, and you'll see plants you do not. Plants growing in places you wish were otherwise. We give these plants a special name. We call these plants weeds. And if we're not careful, they can attract negative feelings. We must be cautious differentiating between weeds and plants, and be mindful when choosing to remove them and what we do with them if we do. What you call a weed may be a fine meal for a chicken, or may flower and provide life to a butterfly or bee. Do not judge good or bad. Do not say true or false. You are projecting your own worldview onto other living beings. Weeds may grow despite the fact that we dislike them. But if we can put aside that initial dislike, weeds can help us gain great insight into the mysteries of our soil. Why are weeds growing here and now? What are those weeds telling me? And this is not just true of weeds in our garden. Weeds will grow in our practice. We may discover them in our zazen or in our reactions to things occurring in our life. The desire to react impulsively and rip the weeds from our practice may be strong, but as we sit or as we go through our lives, we must notice and acknowledge these weeds and see what they may be telling us about the ground in which our practice is rooted. But weeds often grow deep. We may acknowledge and attempt to gently remove them, but do so knowing that as long as the conditions are the same, they're liable to pop up again. Shortly, or they're able to pop up again shortly, and that the goal of removing all weeds from our garden, from our practice may well be futile. Our weeds are not bad; they're not ruining our garden, and they are not separate from it. But despite all that I've said, if we do not respond to these weeds and pull them out from our beds, they do have the ability to take over all the hard work you've put in. So do pull weeds from your garden, but do so with gratitude for what they may be teaching us. Place these weeds in your compost pile so they may be eaten by bugs and worms and turned back into soil, or hand them to your chickens and see the joy and excitement of this gift. And when possible, allow some weeds to thrive, as the flowers they grow are just as beautiful as any other and will provide food for pollinators and homes for small creatures. At the end of summer and the beginning of fall, you'll find your mind turning towards the job of harvesting. In doing so, as you walk through your garden, examining what has been produced, you will undoubtedly see vegetables that will be tempted to see as higher or lower quality. Tomatoes with end rot, broccoli slightly gone to flower, or an array of plants that have been nibbled on by bugs or taken up with aphids. We may think it is best to pick the best looking foods to be brought into our kitchens and leave the undesirable foods to be left aside. However, in the Tenzo Kyokan, Dogen states, in preparing food, never view it from the perspective of usual mind or on the basis of feeling tones. Taking up a blade of grass, erect magnificent monasteries. Turn the wheel of reality within a grain of dust. If you only have wild grasses with which to make a broth, do not disdain them. If you have ingredients for a creamy soup, do not be delighted. Where there is no attachment, there is no aversion. Do not be careless with poor ingredients and do not depend on fine ingredients to do your work. But work with everything with the same sincerity. If you do not do so, then it is like changing your behavior according to the status of a person you meet. This is not how a student of the way is. While you'll likely come across food in your garden that is not fit for human consumption for a number of reasons, we should be careful not to view it as inferior, hold disdain or disappointment with it. We should harvest all food with the care and with all the reverence for the plants we harvest from. As Dogen states, taking up a vegetable leaf manifests the Buddha's 16-foot golden body. Take up the 16-foot golden body and display it as a vegetable leaf. This is the power of functioning freely as the awakening activity which benefits all beings. Each thing we harvest must be seen as the Buddha itself. Further, Dogen states, the Tenzo should go to the administrator and assistant administrator and procure the rice, vegetables, and other ingredients for the next day's morning and noon meals. Having received these things, you must care for them as if you would the pupils of your own eyes. The Tenzo handles all food with respect, as if it were the emperor. Both cooked and uncooked food should be cared for in this way. So we pick our food carefully, placing it gently in our harvesting bags. Do not toss the garlic haphazardly into the bucket, or be careless with your tomatoes, for you know they're being turned into sauce, or fruits you intend to turn into jam. You must work slowly and purposefully, as if you were carrying the Buddha themselves. Be sure to keep only what you are sure you can and use, and consider giving away any extra to your fellow Sangha members or those who are in your community who could use them. As the cool temperatures of the fall begin, it is time to plant your crops, such as garlic, that need to be planted in the ground and stay there over winter. You must clear the rows using with the excess plant materials, stems, roots, leaves, and stalks to build your compost pile that will break down over the coming months, turning into rich soil to nourish your next year's garden. You must clean your tools and cover your garden beds with leaves that have begun to fall from the trees around your garden. Your time in the dirt has nearly ended, and yet it is not time to rest. You may look at your garden and see that it may be covered and quiet, but this is not to be confused with being dormant or asleep. Our garden is never done, but is now doing the work of turning inward to reinvigorate its soil, to reinvigorate its core. Your garden will spend the cool, rainy months turning dying leaves and debris around it into nutrients. It is sitting through rain, allowing this great rain to fall over the whole garden equally, absorbing whatever it will from the sky. Uchiyama-roshi writes, "You might conclude from studying these passages that to take up the problem of the meaning of Zen while working in the role of Tenzo, or vice versa, to ponder the significance of the Tenzo's work while sitting in Zazen would be the perfect way to carry on your practice. Such is not the case. When you sit Zazen, just sit. And when you work as the Tenzo, just do that. It is in the spirit of just sitting or just working that is common to both Zen and to the work of the Tenzo. Concentrating wholly on this one thing is the cornerstone of the teaching." As we witness our garden stillness, as we see it turning inward, we should accept this as a final lesson from our garden, reminding us that with the winter months, we too should step out of the busy role of gardener, put it aside, and move into the quiet contemplation of the rainy season, and refocus our practice onto our Zazen. Much like the garlic that must be planted in late fall and spend its winter under the soil in order to sprout in the spring, we must put our roots down and sit in stillness. In doing so, we would be wise to remember that the garlic is not sitting underground all winter, thinking of what it may become. It is not sitting, wishing for the warmer weather to come sooner. The garlic is not yearning for the day its green shoots will break through the soil and it will feel the warmth of the sun. It is not contemplating what the future will be. Like the garlic, we must not sit with any hopes, dreams, or expectations of what will come. We must simply sit in resolute stillness, existing in this moment, simply creating the conditions for whatever may come. Thank you. That's that. So we have, I'm going to move back to gallery view here. Nice to see you're all still awake. Good, good. It's weird when you're not, when I'm not looking at you at all. And I'm just reading something off another window. So if anyone has any questions or thoughts or whatever about that, I'd be happy to hear it. Otherwise, I might have some other questions or things to you guys can ponder about more generally. There.
Hi, Taylor.
Hello.
This is Junko.
Hello.
I want to ask about your method or philosophy. How to water the plants?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think it goes along with sort of some of the messages that every plant needs something different. So the way you water your tomato plants is going to be different from the way you water your lettuces or whatever. And to simply put like a sprinkler up over your tomato plants is going to be wasteful of your water, and it's actually not as good for your tomato plants. And so I find, as much as I whenever possible, I do this where I try to do everything by hand and water with a watering can. All of these ideas that I have are practices. I certainly do not do all these things all the time. I am often running like a wild man through my garden trying to get things done. That's the but yeah, I find that like a good sized watering can and walking through is just, it's less wasteful of water, which is something in our climate this time of year is very precious. We are all always on low water warnings here. So yeah, watering can into going, and that also gives you a chance to see what's going on with each one of your plants in your garden. But there are some things where it does make more sense if you've got a big, lettuce patch to just have one of the little sprinklery things, or you can set up drip hoses that will help. But yeah, I think knowing what each plant needs and then making that decision based on its needs is probably the most skillful.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
you, Jinko. Yeah, Denny.
Thanks, Tyler. This was just great. I have gardened for food and natural plants for pollinators for 20 years, and I think you should try to publish that. It was just such a great, yeah, it
Well,
was
thank
just
you.
great. And I just wanted to add something first on watering, just a plug for rain barrels. We have a couple of rain barrels, and I use a watering can with water from that when I can, because you can really tell the difference with the plants because there's so much natural nitrogen in there. But secondly, just I about 2 or 3 years ago, I was having a fall and a spring that were very challenging, and I just asked myself, what can I do to still have a garden and not have to go through all the spring stuff? And so I harvested everything I could and gave away what we couldn't use and just mulched the whole garden. I didn't plant any seeds. I just wanted to see what would happen. And both years now, I get volunteer tomatoes, both heritage and, well, they're both heritage. Kale and chard, which is supposed to be annual and not perennial, they've come up from the roots that survived under the mulch, and the
Oh, wow.
plants are twice as hardy as the ones that I buy, at the farmer's market. And all kinds of herbs, dill, two or three pepper plants. What else? Squash too, but all kinds of beautiful food that didn't take a seed or a small plant, no digging at all. And it also provided food for the birds and the squirrels and the rabbits and the insects that was rotting on the ground from the growing season before. So I just wanted to add that it just is something that makes gardening, it was an experience I had that made gardening even more magical and brought across the point that there's this cycle that just never ends and it doesn't even really need you sometimes.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting about just like, yeah, just leaving it just with the mulch over top. I'd considered doing a section at the end on saving seeds and like trying to doing some philosophical, but I just was like, I feel like I'm running out of time on this thing. But that's a, I really,
Yeah.
that and watering are two like really interesting additions that I think there's a lot of room for our practice in. Thank you so much.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
I
Leah?
wanted
Oh.
Tyler. Oh,
Or
no, go ahead.
I only wanted to jump in because I wanted to spin off of what Denny was saying. I'm not a gardener in any way, shape, or form. I've got no green thumbs. I've got no green anything. But I really appreciated your talk and some of the metaphors for that cycle of life and how that pertains to our practice. Really, really was powerful and makes me want to take up gardening, honestly. just from that perspective of like how that activity is so endemic of our what we go through as just as bodhisattvas in bodhisattvas in waiting, if you would. Like I just it really it seems like a very powerful way to embody the practice. And so I really resonated with, even though I don't know the first thing about gardening, it really was
I agree.
quite powerful. And there's something that Denny said made me think. I've been reading this book on Yogacara, the Vasubandhu's 30 Verses, the book by Ben Connolly that just came out. And he breaks down, Yogacara was a consciousness only that kind of preceded some of the Mahayana thought. And it kind of synthesized some of the Theravadan and the Mahayana thought. And he breaks down the different levels of consciousness, starting with touch, right? Because you can be in a completely silent environment, completely no visual stimuli whatsoever. You still have your sense of touch. The nerve endings on your body are still active. And then working your way up through the rest of the sense of sight and sound and smell and taste and whatnot. But then that next level up is manas consciousness, which is the self-awareness, a consciousness of, oh, I am a thing experiencing senses of touch and taste and smell. I there's something experiencing that sensory input. But then the level above that is the alaya consciousness, which is the karmic consciousness. And so it was what Denny just said, just a little light bulb went off on how that you're what you said about your garden and just mulching everything and just letting it sit. And then stuff started to pop up anyway, right? Because in the teachings of karma, the teachings of alaya consciousness, this idea of seeds that are watered, and the what grows as a result of those seeds that you don't even necessarily see where it came from. That metaphor is used quite often in those Buddhist teachings on consciousness and karma in particular. And so I just really got this strong feeling of, wow, your garden is manifesting in real life what we go through. Right, these seeds that are under the surface that we may think that we mulch the whole thing and it's all we're starting from scratch, but there's still these little karmic seeds just under the surface that are ready to sprout, and we'll have no idea, like where did this even come from? Like, we could probably trace it back, like, oh, it was, I thought I got rid of this, this grief that I had, or this anxiety that I had, or this anger that I had. I thought I got rid of it. I thought I mulched it over, but there's still that seed underneath that's, might just pop through at some point in the near future. And how we can recognize that, like, it's where did this come from? It doesn't really matter where it came from. It matters what I do with it. And so that element of your talk, Tyler, was just really wonderful. Like, here, this thing is here. This thing has sprouted. It's grown. It's ripened. Now, what do I do with it? How do I take skillful action? So I really, really resonated with everything you said, Tyler and Denny. I really appreciate your comments as well. It just really got me thinking a lot about that. So thank you.
And just real quickly, Buddha nature is also sometimes referred to as a seed. And
Oh.
Tyler mentioned that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I noticed as I went, there's a lot of garden seed metaphors in Buddhism in general. So a lot of that was sort of easy, a little there for the picking. But Leah, you've been waiting. Love to hear what you have to say.
There for the picking, no pun
Oh,
intended,
yeah.
right?
I know the metaphors are right. Anyway, so I've always been a weed champion, okay? And I know that sounds very odd, but there's sort of like the pre-Oregon me and the me who lived in California and who had not very much access to the natural world. I was in suburbia, a very small area. I tried to grow things, but I didn't really have a lot of I didn't do so very consciously of what belonged or didn't. I just was sort of like, okay, well, what are the neighbors doing? What of my front yard looks like? And does this grow? Oh, okay. Like very, not quite in tune with it. But then when I moved to Oregon and I got this new spot that I hate the word property. I am stewarding this little patch of land for now, and it is quite a lot more than I used to have, and it's a lot wilder than I used to have access to. And so in doing that, I have made peace with weeds and the definition of what a weed is, and it's like the whole world has opened up for me in ways that it's hard to describe. I'm just going to go into the weed metaphor with like, it's there. Why is it there? What is it providing? And it's a plant like the other plants. There's no binary good, bad
there's like this, you know, subtle scale of like, how okay is this? And how do we, and what is okay? You know, like all these different sort of like, it gets into my spiritual development where I'm thinking about preferences. Like, what would I like? Okay, so like that sort of you know, gradual acceptance and openness to what is, and weeds are sort of my touchstone for that. But just practically, I have always been a homeowner association nightmare. And I have a homeowner association, so, and I didn't know I would hate it so much, but I'm just like, okay, this is more about me preferring. I prefer not to have homeowner association, but homeowner association nightmare means you've torn up your lawns, you only mulch with natural things, you only plant natural things, you allow things that volunteer to grow, and you are selective about weeds. So someday, I hope everyone we'll get the opportunity to visit my little patch of my little place I'm stewarding for the moment and see how beautiful it actually is, weeds or no.
Sweet.
Thank you, Leah. Yeah, I found that the weeds metaphor definitely had yeah, and it comes into our practice a lot, and I was enjoying playing with that. Paulette, did I see that your hand was raised?
Yeah,
Yes.
I mistakenly raised it in the beginning too. But this time I meant to do it. I just wrote it in the chat, but I'll just read what I wrote. So I just want to thank you for this talk. I love to garden. And there's so many parallels between Buddhism and gardening, like you know, being conscientious, being careful, paying attention to subtlety, listening. And so I think I actually think that when I garden, I'm a better practitioner, and I really liked what you said about the growing, the plants growing us as much as we're growing them. I thought that was beautiful. Thank you.
Sorry, I just wanted to raise my hand quickly because this was a very rich and wonderful talk, Tyler. I can't thank you enough. Very impressive. But I did want to echo what Paulette said about listening. It's making me wish I had my garden again. I had to drop everything pretty quickly back in the spring. And so I had to let my garden patches go. But I remember going out there and listening. And it's silent in a very unusual way. It's almost noisy in its silence. And I don't know if you've ever felt this, Tyler or Paulette, but I always felt that I was not alone, even when there was nobody out there. Anyway, thank you.
Afternoon, everybody. Tyler, thank you very much. Are you saying that I have to come to terms with the people growing palm trees in Oregon? Anyways, that's not the point. I it was really, really profound, everything you were expressing, and the mindfulness that we can take in every action. And for myself, as I was listening to you, I found myself considering my this and now and here. And that is currently seeking employment. And so I imagined, or I guess I related the seeds to applications, and how I remember in the past, before Zen, before actually adopting a meditation practice, that it would spiral out into oh, and then we can move there, and then if I, you know, am what is it, Well, this has never occurred before, so I'm losing the word. Promoted to another level and up all these things that can happen when in re the reality is that I put this application out and it just it's there. Whatever happens, is the way is the truth of the reality. Either there will be an acceptance or there will be communication or there may be nothing or there may be a rejection, and just being able to accept that fact. And then once something grows, being in that environment and appreciating each individual, appreciating each plant that exists in that new garden, where whatever the location may be or whatever the company or environment may be. And as Jinryu and Paula were saying, taking that time to listen and be a supportive and appreciative part of that whole holistic ecosystem that you've related to all of us. So Tyler, thank you very much for that, bringing that to us.
Well, Tyler, your students are lucky, as are your kids. I love the richness, the metaphor, but actually, I think as a Dharma talk, there was much sharing, even especially for those that are not able to garden anymore. And we partnership as a gardener with what is out of our control. And because in Zen, we just realize our interconnectedness. And this was very sweet and timely as we start edging into a different cycle of the year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruthann. We have reached our time for today. So is it okay if I just do the closing? Yeah. All right. Abiding in this ephemeral world, like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All beings throughout space, time, all ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Tyler.
Great job.